Kiev.
And on August 29th, they're having a big mobilization on that weekend, having a big mobilization outside of his clinic with the aim of shutting it down. And there's going to be another mobilization. It's called for people who want to support Dr. Carhart and who want to defend the right of women to abortion and to full participation in the society, to come and stand with Dr. Carhart, defend him and defend abortion rights and the right of women to participate fully in society. Dr. Carhart, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Welcome. I'm just glad to be here.
Okay. Well, why don't we jump right into this? And I should let people know that Deborah Sweet, from the National Director of World Can't Wait, is going to be joining us a little bit later to talk about the mobilization that's coming out to defend you. But before we get into that, I wanted to start talking with you. And in the aftermath of Dr. Tiller's assassination, you immediately, like I was saying, you stepped up to defend a woman's right to abortion, and you announced that you wouldn't only be continuing your own work, but continuing to provide late-term abortions to the women who need them, including all of Dr. Tiller's patients. Why?
Well, first of all, I had worked with Dr. Tiller. George and I have been friends for 20-some years, and I've actually worked in his clinic for the last 10 and a half, almost 11 years. And for the last 4 years, it was on its every-week rotation. Two women from California who worked the other 2 weeks, and we did late. When I don't like the word late term because nobody really knows what late term is, and for some people it means 14, 15 weeks, and for some 28, 38 weeks, and you just, you know, I think the second trimester, the last part of the second trimester, early part of third trimester abortions are the ones we are talking about, which in the whole country probably number maybe a year, maybe 1,200 a year for everybody, not just myself, but for everybody in the country that's been doing them. So it's a very number of abortions that we're talking about providing, but it's a very, very needed service for that small percentage that actually do need it.
Now, you began your work as an abortion provider in the late 80s, right? Mid to late 80s?
Yes, sir, I did. It was 1980, and I started working for not exactly true. In my medical school and in my internship and residency, all three, I worked where abortions were part of the training program. So I've been exposed to doing abortions actually since 1970. So it wasn't new to me. But then when I was on active duty with the Air Force between 1970 and 1985, I did not do any more abortions, of course, because of the Hyde Amendment. They weren't allowed in the military, and I didn't work outside of the military.
So what took you there? How did you end up, you know, you were actually a general surgeon, and then at a certain point you decided to become an abortion provider.
Right, and there's a nurse of mine, that's not true. She was a patient of mine when I was in the Air Force. I had operated on Jenny and then subsequently on her husband, who was active duty, for a different, he had a hernia, and I believe hers was gallbladder. And then shortly after I had retired from the course, her daughter had a ruptured appendix, and she had called me, and I took care of her in the hospital. And it was during this treatment of the hospital she mentioned that she, you know, had a clinic where they was getting ready to retire, and she didn't know what she was going to do, doctor. And we talked, and it took about a year and a half for me to agree to go and meet with her, and just to see what it was like, you know, at the abortion clinic, because I had just gotten out of the military, you know, and opened up a general surgery and wasn't really ready, I thought, to turn my life around. But actually, after spending 1 year there at the clinic, it reminded me of the way things were back when I was in medical school and residency, when abortion was not legal yet. And the women were, you know, they had the same compelling reasons that these people did in 1988, but yet they were coming to the clinic either very, very septic or dying even from self-attempted or the so-called backstab abortions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things that I found really, really outstanding about, you know, some of the things that I've read, the interviews with you, as well as some of the articles that have been about you, you are not in the least bit defensive about being an abortion provider, which I think is extremely important, both in general as well as, you know, as for women and generally in society, that this is, look, you, like you say, it's not a four-letter word, and I'm proud of what I do. You know, and I'm thinking about this, and I think, you know, when Dr. Tiller was killed, or in the 90s, when other, you know, and later, you know, when the this sort of the violence against abortion providers and clinics kept on going, and then in particular after Bush left, the Bush regime was out, there's been a spike in the violence that's been directed at abortion providers. You know, that you actually, I just have to tell you, it made my heart sore to read about the way you took this, you put this gigantic, instead of hiding, because you said you had to have a face on abortion providers, and you said that, you know, instead of hiding your clinic, you actually have a 30-foot by 8-foot sign that says the Abortion and Contraception Clinic of Nebraska?
Yes, sir, that's true.
Congratulations. Really important to do that. I think that's an amazing, but it also raises this, because you know, what you're doing is you serve in that clinic, you serve women that come from as many as 5 states or more. And in addition, I understand you're sort of what they call a circuit rider. Can you talk about what that says? What is a circuit rider? And also, what does this general situation say about the availability of abortion and abortion doctors today?
Yeah, well, you know, when I started abortions in the 80s, there were about 2,700 to 2,800 abortion doctors in the country, and I started out only doing part-time, working 2 days a week in the local clinic here, and then it went to 3 days a week, and eventually 4 days a week. And then in 1991, we had a massive fire at the farm where there was actually 18 different fire origin points of vehicles and buildings. Everything on the property was burnt to the ground. And we lost 7 horses and our dog, cat, everything we owned. And the day after the morning, like 10 o'clock in the morning after the fire, we got a letter that was postmarked in the morning of the day before the fire was even reported. At least they traced it back to being before the fire was reported, justifying the killing of horse animals for the murder of children, little babies or something like that. We had given that letter to ATF and to the DOJ, but there was just nothing that was ever done about that. But it was in 1991 that I decided then that abortion was going to be a full-time thing on my plate. And at the time, several clinics throughout the country did not have doctors, and so I just started, and for a while, from the year 1992, between June and the summer of 95, I was working in 6 different states every week. And the reason, just because of the low number of doctors, I would travel. And the other thing I was able to do was to train doctors in at least, you know, 3 of the clinics, so that, in fact, all 3 of the doctors I trained are still providing abortions today. They're 3 of the ones that are left. And during that period of time, so it just was helped to fulfill the need, and that was my way, you know, of, I couldn't go and hide because of what they did, and I surely wasn't going to quit. So I figured that the best revenge was really just to train other people so that, you know, and this was also shortly after David Gunn was murdered in Pensacola, so that was just what I thought was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, you began to talk about this earlier on when you said you didn't like the term late-term abortion. You said the late part of the second term, early part of the third term. You know, why is it important that this type of abortion be safely and legally available to women?
Well, you know, first of all, pregnancy, just any pregnancy, is not a benign entity for a woman. When a woman wants to have a child, I mean, it's what they'll go through, and it's, you know, and it's what every one of us as a physician wants them to be able to go through. But about, in the United States today, depending on the studies you read, anywhere from 16 to 20 women out of every 1,000 that are pregnant die during the pregnancy or within the 30-day period after delivery. The death rate, or the chance of dying from an abortion, even when you throw in the latest abortions that are done, stays around between 8 and 10 in 1.5 million patients, or maybe 6 per million. So it's significantly safer for a woman to terminate a pregnancy if she doesn't want to be. So I feel very strongly that if somebody's carrying an unwanted pregnancy and we're forcing them to stay pregnant, that that's really, you know, it's if we're forcing them to take a risk that they don't want to take, which is most other parts of the law not at all allowed.
But let me ask you this, because here's a question here, is that, and I read, from what I read, that these particular types of abortion, these later abortions, abortions done later, much later in the term of the pregnancy, are only 1.3% of the abortions. You know, only 1.3% of all abortions happen after the 21st week. But yet, it's very important to draw the line there. At least that's, it seems that that's what you're saying, and I would agree with you. But I'd like you to explain to our listeners, why is it important to actually not say, okay, look, we'll concentrate just on what may be easier, is the, you know, the earlier abortions. But you've actually made a point that these abortions, which frankly the anti-women, you know, crusaders have made a huge amount of political hay out of going after, particularly those few of the doctors, you, Dr. Tiller, and what, one or two others that actually have basically had the courage to perform these abortions and to argue that they have to be done. They have to be legally done and safely done. Why is it important to draw the line around that?
First of all, I don't think that we've drawn the line on that. I think that's been the problem, this line, because they feel that it's the easiest target. I mean, this is something that they can make sound repulsive to everyone. And, you know, I think that's why the line is there. And the other thing in my mind, too, I mean, you could talk to somebody that's, you know, if he said, well, we're not going to do anybody after 12 weeks, I would be willing to guarantee that there are several people that would terminate the pregnancy at 12 weeks, yet had they thought about it for 3 or 4 weeks, would have decided that they want to go on and continue that. We send women home virtually, in fact, one today and one yesterday, but almost every day we send women home and tell them that we really do not think they've thought this through far enough. And probably 90% come back, but 10% don't come back. And I've got, you know, from one patient, a really wonderful letter that sends me pictures of her baby, or her child now, he's almost 8. Every year on his birthday, because I had sent her home and said, you know, I don't really think this is where your heart and your mind are. You need to go home and get them both on the same page. And she sends me a, you know, picture every year with a letter what they're doing. And I think, you know, so if she had had to make a decision at 12 weeks, she would have probably had the abortion. But we sent her home to think about it, said, you know, you've got plenty of time. Yes, it's a little more money. Yes, it's a little more risky. But the risk and the money is minimal compared to the rest of your life. And so, you know, just that one person makes it worth being able to say, you know, take another week and think about it. So for that reason, I think it's really important. And secondly, many of the problems that we don't, at least we're getting better every year and finding them earlier, but a lot of them don't surface and don't become known to the, you know, to their doctors and the patients until much later in the pregnancy. And it's just, you know, I think that if a woman at 22 weeks wants 2 or 3 or 4 weeks more to try to figure out if there's a way to salvage this pregnancy and make it, get it through to delivery, then I think she should be given that opportunity rather than being encouraged or forced to terminate before the 22nd or 24th week or what other magic number you plug into it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't agree more. I think, and I want to let listeners know that I'm Michael Slayton. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And we're talking today to Dr. Lee Carhart. And he's currently been declared the number one target of Operation Rescue. He's one of the few late second term, early third term abortion providers in the country. And he's one of a dwindling number of doctors who actually are providing abortions in general to women who need them. And he's doing everything he can, as he says, to train as many abortion providers as possible, including as many people who will take up the practice that he's taken up as possible. Now, Dr. Carhart, you know, one of the things that actually, you know, I remember hearing this, and you know, one of the things that's actually become very sort of out there in the neighborhood, in the air, in the community in general, the idea that women somehow did, and of course a lot of these fundamentalist groups and these anti-women groups are pushing this. I saw a movie a couple weeks ago that was actually a whole thing around this movement that gets women to come up and say that they regret having their abortion, you know, which to me is really insidious and just really hateful and just one of these things that, you know, you really just, it makes my teeth chatter, you know, in just outrage. And I'd like to ask you, you know, the thing that I keep thinking about is the need for this slogan, abortion on demand without apology. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I think that it came out of in the feminist movement early in the, or maybe late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, I think that it certainly is the right that you want to have in the beginning. And I think it's okay. I don't think that any doctor that's looking at that patient, you know, I mean, at 4, 5, 6, 8 weeks, it's probably very appropriate that it's, you know, abortion. I mean, that they didn't want to be pregnant. There's no reason to force them to be pregnant. I think that comes a little more, you know, and it, we see this in women. That's, the farther it gets into the pregnancy, it's no longer, you know, the more and more goes into termination. I mean, it's not unusual to have people say that they've been just on the fence for the last 4 months. They get to 10 or 12 or 14 weeks saying, I've been trying to figure out what's right, what's wrong, and I just haven't been able to make my mind up yet. So as it gets later into the pregnancy, you know, the very same people that would have said, oh, this is just right at all the times may not agree with that statement. And, you know, I think the philosophy that that it should be always a woman's right to choose abortion if that's what has to be the decision for her, I think that is appropriate, and I think that's what they're really saying when they say abortion on demand without, you know, without remorse or without regret. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the women especially that are in the second and third trimesters never come to an abortion just because, you know, at 26 weeks they want to be able to go to a party and have a dress fit. You hear that antis make statements like that. You know, women know by the time they're past the 10th or 12th week how severe this is. I mean, we're doing a study right now in conjunction with a group in California on what the ultrasounds, what the effect of the patient seeing the 3D or 4D ultrasounds are. And we're doing, you know, we did one just today, yesterday, of a 23-week woman, and she just finished today. And she's saying, oh, you know, look, there's the hands, there's the face, there's this. And I see all that, but it just makes me realize how important giving a good life to this child is. And I cannot do that at where I am in my life right now. And it would be so selfish of me to bring the child bring this child into the world. And she sat there and cried, but she said, this is just what I have to do. And, you know, I just think she spent weeks talking to her partner and talking to her family, and that's the decision she's came up with. And to think that it's just being glossed over, they imply, that's just does not happen after the, you know, women that are, I'd say even after the 12th week, nobody has an abortion unless they really thought it through.
Now, one quick question, then we're going to bring Deborah Sweet on to join you. You and Dr. Tiller both were known for two simple words that carried mountainous weight, and that was trust women. What were you saying with that?
Actually, that was a slogan of Dr. Tiller that back in when I first started working with him in 1998 or something like that, I think it was, no, 97, and we were starting a fund, and I said, you know, George, that's just the perfect slogan for this fund, the Abortion and Access Fund that I'm trying to get started. Do you mind if I use that? And he said, you know, he didn't know I'd be happy if he used it. So that, you know, we both used that from then on, and I eventually had it copywritten right after he had said we could do that. And it's just been the sign for our website that we have for trying to fund monies or raising money to fund abortion clinic mortgages, and then interest on the mortgages, all instead of going in to buy a boat, goes in the banker's pocket, goes to funding abortions for poor women. So the money really never goes away. It just gets spent. You know, the principal keeps growing.
Well, let me bring Deborah Sweet on now, and stick with us for a few more minutes, Doctor, about 10 more minutes, actually. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael, and hi, Dr. Carhart.
Hi, Deborah. How are you? Hi, Michael. And please, you know, you all call me Lee. I'd so much rather...
Okay, I wasn't sure, Lee. I was going to, and I just got stuck in the Dr. Carhart mode.
Hi, Lee.
So let me ask you firstly, and then Deborah, you can join in on this. Lee, Operation Rescue has declared you target number one. What do you think around that? What's your reaction to that?
You know, I don't think it matters where you are on their target list. The fact that we are targets, Dr. Tiller knew it. Dr. Hearn knows that I knew it. The girls from California that work with me know it. And, you know, it does. But on the other hand, with our society today, if you work in Walmart, you work in Dillard's, where we had a shooting here 3 years ago in Omaha, and people were killed, postal workers, you know, it doesn't matter. There's danger. There's fringe elements in every part of society. The part that bothers me is the hate language, and it's the instilling of the hate thought rhetoric into the minds of the people that the anti-abortion protesters do. Not that I don't think that the leaders would probably never do anything, but their goal is to incite the fringe, borderline, stable people into saying, oh my God, he's a murderer, I'm going to have to take care of this. Nobody else will.
Deborah, any comments on it?
Well, I really agree with that. We've had 36 years of a movement that has hammered relentlessly on the idea that abortion is murder. And abortion isn't murder. You know, fetuses aren't babies. Fetuses are dependent on a living woman. And women are not supposed to be incubators. We don't want that. You know, we just don't want to live in a society like that. And when you have a movement that is built on the assumption that women determining their own lives is somehow illegitimate, and that a whole group of people, all the people that provide abortions in this country, are somehow illegitimate and targets for murder, target number one or target number 1200. It's all completely unacceptable, and I think it's time for a resurgence of a moral and political offensive on the part of the people who are pro-choice in this country.
Now, Deborah, as National Director of World Can't Wait, you participated. You were one of the organizations that actually issued a call for a mobilization around Lee's clinic and to defend him and to defend the clinic. And this is in the face of this, which I'm, you know, I think actually, you know, part of the thing is yes, what does it mean when or how you respond to them declaring it's target number one? But it's also true that this is a very serious, you know, very, very serious situation here. I mean, actually, when you think about it, Operation Rescue, even the, you know, it was interesting when they were talking about the guy that assassinated Dr. Tiller, they were talking about how he had been in phone contact with one of the administrators from Operation Rescue, you know, and they were, and, you know, and that sort of just was left laying there, you know, and not, you know, and there's a whole atmosphere that this kind of declaration of target number one or, you know, this is a murder, all the stuff that you're talking about, is true, but you know, in terms of the kind of atmosphere that they're creating, but it's also it indicates the seriousness, and it demands a certain seriousness in the response, I would think, and that seems to be some of what's behind this mobilization you're talking about too, right?
Well, you know, I'm very concerned for Lee and all the other doctors, and I'm just really determined that we turn this situation around. And number one, put some bodies out on the street. Have some visible rejection of this climate that's being created, and have people out being very public about our support for these doctors. That's what we have to do. For people who can't come, you know, you can make a donation, and we'll put a big sign in your name. That's fine. Donate so other people can be there. But, you know, I want to say right now that, yes, we should be mobilizing. This is a very serious situation. This is the first serious targeting of a provider since they killed Dr. Tiller. And they're saying that they want to close Lee's clinic down. We cannot let that happen. And I think a challenge should go out to all the leaders of the women's movement and other pro-choice organizations. All of us leaders should be there Friday morning. August 28th, we're going to have a press conference at the clinic of the leaders of the different organizations, and all the national leaders should be there. And I'm going to call all of them personally and tell them that.
Mm-hmm. And you've said, World Can't Wait has also made a comment that this should not be a mobilization as usual. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, look, you know, they killed Dr. Tiller. They've killed other doctors in the past, but this is clearly a turn. And all of us who care very deeply about the ability of women to function in this society have to, on our part, shoulder some personal responsibility. And I think it's just that serious, and that people who care about the humanity of women and want to turn this situation around have to make some sacrifices, too. We cannot sit back and say that it's okay for these doctors to be the only ones taking the risk.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lee, you mentioned about the attack on your farm and your home, and you know you've also, I mean, you have a long list of, I mean, just reading through it, I'm amazed that you're able to function in anything even remotely resembling normalcy. You have been, you know, everything from hounded at airports to, you know, to the constant appearances outside the clinic, to tailing you, to all this other stuff, you know, and yet in the midst of this thing, we're right after, you know, with this Operation Rescue mobilization happening, the mobilization against your clinic and against you happening, then, you know, you also had for a time being in the aftermath of Dr. Tiller being assassinated, there was some federal martial protection. That's been withdrawn now. Is that true?
Well, one thing I never talk about, I tell everybody, is I never discuss security or my schedule.
Okay.
And that's just I think that the federal, I think what I can say is, you know, I think the only thing I can say is that I feel very comfortable with the level of security that the federal agencies, all the federal agencies are providing for us right now. You know, I don't really want to say that, you know, I will first of all say the marshals are not dead while I'm talking to you. Yes, that part is true, but, I think they're providing every bit of security that they can and that should be, you know,
That's fine. I wasn't trying to. I actually think it's very smart not to get very deeply in that. I thought it was just an outrage when I read that, and I think I read it in Newsweek or somewhere where they said that this had been withdrawn, or maybe another website where they said it had been withdrawn. I thought, whoa, what is this? But you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is that. Well, let me first remind listeners that I'm Michael Slate. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and I'm talking today with Dr. Lee Carhart, and he's an abortion provider a very heroic abortion provider in Nebraska, in Bellevue, Nebraska. And his clinic and he have come under attack from Operation Rescue. And on the weekend of the 28th, 29th, this month, there's going to be an Operation Rescue mobilization at that clinic. And there's also a counter mobilization to defend the clinic and to defend Lee. And, you know, let me ask both of you this. Lee, you said in that August 31st edition of Newsweek, you said, "They're at war with us. We have to realize this isn't just a difference of opinion. We need to fight back." Can you explicate that? Or can you, you know, expand on that?
Well, I know that I can. I mean, I think that they have been openly at war with us for 30 of the 36 years that Roe has been around. And we have, you know, the typical pro-choice side of the movement is, okay, well, that's their opinion, they're entitled to it, and that's certainly my feeling, that is their opinion, they're entitled to it. They're not entitled to any of the hate crimes that they do, any of the harassments that they do. I mean, it's their opinion, but they have no right to force that opinion onto the other women. That becomes fascist, and that's where I think they are right now.
You have been very, very insistent on this should be called out as a hate crime, right?
I feel absolutely correct that they are, you know, tolerating the anti-abortion factions, and they're tolerating their hate crimes, I think, is absolutely part of the reason why we've seen the escalation, and not with Dr. Tiller's murder, but also the murders of the two soldiers down in the South, the murder of the security guard at the Holocaust Museum, murders of these women. I mean, I think the fringe element is becoming emboldened because society has tolerated this one, and well, okay, abortion's not my kick, but I'm against this, so I guess it's okay for me to do this. I think it's just a part of our society, and I, you know, they say abortion is ruining society. I think not. I think the tolerance of the anti-abortion activity, the tolerance of hate crimes by the administration, is what's ruining the American society.
Okay, Deborah, can you comment on that at all?
Well, I really agree that, you know, the people that advocate finding common ground with the anti-abortion movement are contributing to this situation. Common ground has become the killing ground. And now that Dr. Tiller has been murdered under a new administration, you know, Lee and I were both at Dr. Tiller's funeral along with many other abortion providers, but there were no national public officials there. I don't even know if there were any local public officials there. No one from the Obama administration. No one from the governor's office. you know, and these are supposedly pro-choice officials. No message even sent. And the message being sent there was abortion providers and women whose lives depend on them are expendable. So fighting back, I really agree with the spirit of fighting back. And, you know, I feel like we have to go on a cultural and moral offensive taking back the high ground here. Not that we've ever lost it, but we haven't fought for it. The women's movement and the pro-choice movement has been relatively passive in letting this all be determined in a way that didn't give the agency to us for standing up in our own right for what we need. Just mean women in this situation, but certainly this is all about the ability of women to be able to function in society.
Let me ask you both, we have about 4 minutes left. Let me ask you both, Lee, maybe you could speak first. If I was to ask you, which I will ask you, what are the stakes in all this right now? What would you say?
I'd say, first of all, you know, I think, and this is going along Dr. Tiller's line, and it's his dogma, but it's been mine since the beginning, too, that this is not a war about abortion, not a war about late-term abortion. What they've done is picked on late term because they can make that seem more gruesome. They've picked on abortion because they can make that seem more gruesome. But this is a war against women's rights. When you look at the people that are on the sidewalks, the groups that are doing this, they're all the fundamentalist religions that want women barefoot, pregnant, and in the home. That's what this is all about. I think if they could take away the woman's right to vote, that's where they're really trying to get to. And until people realize that this is just one, the beginning of the ice tip that they're trying to take away, that the conservatives want to take away from the women of America, until they realize how important what they've got to lose is, that there's a great danger of that happening.
Deborah?
That's it. We have to draw a line here and make a stand around this. And again, the local chapters of NOW out in Wichita and Nebraska have taken the lead on this and calling on pro-choice people to come in. World Can't Wait and other groups are going to join in. But we need more people and we need support. So people can contact us at worldcan'twait.org and we'll pass that support along to Dr. Carhart and we will be there starting on the 27th of August. So come on out.
Now, just one quick question here too. You know, there's a part of this thing that I think actually, Lee, your response has been very, very, like I said, very, very inspirational. And in terms of your response to Dr. Tiller's assassination and stepping up even more strongly than before, I would think it seems anyway, in terms of I'm not going to turn around, I'm not going to back off. You know, have you guys seen this actually reflected any more broadly in society? Do you think, you know, in terms of this thing of the way things are shaping up, do you see people coming forward, beginning to come forward? Deborah, you were talking about a little bit about the, that the women's movement has been kind of laid back on us for a while and it hasn't been as intense as it needs to be. Do you see something breaking around that now?
Yeah. I mean, it's really do or die time. And we're way behind the curve, but I do see things changing and I see people waking up and facing reality more. Unfortunately, we had to lose Dr. Tiller for this to begin to start to turn around, and now we need a massive change.
Lee, any final thoughts, comments?
No, I think Deborah's right, and you know, I think we do need the people to try to step out and help us. We've got I think one of the things we're doing is the pledgeofpicket.org thing we've got up now where people can just contribute 5 cents or 10 cents for each picketer each day during the week, and limit it. And that money going to fund abortion, so that, you know, I think one of the ways we can fight to them is for every person they put on the street, it puts a dollar into the clinic's pocketbook, so that they can pay for an abortion for a woman that doesn't have any insurance or doesn't have Medicaid. I mean, where Medicaid doesn't cover it. So even that's one of the ways we can fight. That everybody that leaves. You know, and this in Nebraska, I've done 60,000 abortions on Nebraska women in the past 23 years. They've got maybe 500 people at the most they could count on at any time. So if the people just wake up and say, this is where the numbers are, this argument would have been over. It would have been a closed book. George and I would have been fishing somewhere in the Bahamas. But unfortunately, this is where we are.
Well, unfortunately and fortunately, you are You are here, and that's something for people everywhere. For people who give a damn about humanity and to any degree, that's very important, and that's something very positive for us. Lee, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael. Stay safe
and stay strong, and talk to you again soon. Deborah, as always, a pleasure having you on.
And Lee is a hero. And say the word abortion out loud every day.
Exactly.
Abortion is not a four-letter word. Thank you, Deborah.
All right. Take care, you guys. I'll talk to you again soon.